because he sure missed you.
It's the Tarrant Show.
The Tarrant Show.
Now he's all booted up and ready to go.
It's the Tarrant Show.
A simple name. We're a simple guy with a simple face.
It's the Tarrant Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Tarrant Show. Today, I have a great conversation to show you. I talked with Nicole Maines, who is from Maine. She is also Supergirl, an actor, and a great person. Great fun to talk to. We talked about Supergirl being an actor, what it was like growing up for her in Maine. She has quite the story there. And I hope all of you enjoy it because I know that I did. So here you go. Here is Nicole Maines. First of all, how are you?
I'm tired.
Tired.
I'm good. I just moved to Los Angeles.
Okay.
For the first time, because of course I went to Supergirl just right from Maine because I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
When I was cast. So I never really did the whole LA scene situation. Mm-hmm. So this is my first time living here and I am late to everything.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I knew the traffic was going to be bad, but this is like, and I feel like it's such a like cold take to be like, ooh, LA traffic is bad, but like, fuck.
I'm right there with you. It's so funny too. Cause, I think we've talked about this, but like, I grew up in Maine. Mm-hmm. And then I lived in Boston for a while cause I went to college there. I just moved to San Diego. So I've been up to LA a few times and I'm experiencing the same thing. I'm like, this sucks.
I don't understand how people do it. I don't understand. First of all, why?
Yeah.
But I feel, it feels like this should have been a problem that was solved by now. But
it's really like a 10-minute drive is an hour and a half.
It's never taken me so long to go like a mile.
Yeah. You just like, come down to San Diego. It's much better here.
Yeah, seriously. Well, I mean, of course, you know, like in Maine too, it's, you know, people are like, oh yeah, it's just an hour drive this way. Mm-hmm. No problem. In Los Angeles, that's like just going to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't
understand.
Maine,
you can get like, halfway up the state. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, geez. Time management, man.
So when did you get to LA?
I got here late August, and then I moved into my new place beginning of September. I really like it. It's nice. It's a cute little two-bedroom situation in Van Nuys.
Oh, very cool.
I'm liking it. I'm liking it a lot. Quiet neighborhood.
You're probably experiencing the same thing I am, which is that it's winter right now, but it's not really.
You know, I thought I was going to feel a type of way about not having like seasons. Turns out I don't mind winter being like 80 degrees.
It's
turns
nice.
Out I don't miss it.
Yep. I spent Thanksgiving morning on a beach. It was great.
I mean, living your best life.
Yes.
First of all. Okay. It's weird, but I'm like a person. I just like to go on walks and take strolls, and it's nice to be able to do that year round.
Mm-hmm.
And not feel like I need to wear a snowsuit, like on not Home Alone, a Christmas Story style with my arms sticking straight out.
I always hated the snow pants, anything snow related.
Snow pants.
Yeah. Yes. I hated that so much.
Ugh,
I used to walk with my legs apart to try to avoid.
Just starfishing down the sidewalk.
Yep. Man. So have you been living in, Maine up until that point?
Yeah. Well, so the past 3 years have kind of been with Supergirl, a little nomadic because my parents moved out of Maine, moved to Texas. So they're in Austin now. And so when I haven't been filming, it's kind of like sometimes I go to Los Angeles for a couple weeks. Sometimes I go to Austin. Sometimes I stay in Vancouver. So I was kind of in a transitional period for a while.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the first moment where I have, I think, kind of like a home base,
mm-hmm.
Which is good. And it's, you know, it's still being furnished and it's not home yet, but you know, just the more stuff and it's really exciting and I'm kind of approaching it like an art project. And I mean, my Pinterest board is just out of control. And don't get me started on my Wayfair wish list.
Oh boy.
But Yeah. So, you know, just everything it gets slowly starting to make it feel more like home, and I'm excited to kind of have somewhere to call my own. Cause my place in Vancouver was kind of mine, but it was furnished. So none of the stuff was mine. And it felt just kind of like I was living in someone else's house for 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have my own space and my own stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was really excited to furnish this place. And it was exciting at first, and now I'm still I still haven't finished because it's just too much.
That's the joy of home decorating. You're never done, are you?
No. And, I'm getting there though. I feel like, it's almost there.
I feel like it's one of did you ever get into The Sims or anything?
I never got into The Sims. I did like Minecraft a little bit and stuff like that.
So sort of the same, but for me, I would spend forever making the characters, and I'd spend forever use all the cheat codes, money's no object, and Property Brothers flip a house and make it gorgeous. I didn't care about their lives.
Yeah.
I didn't care about my Sims are getting married. No, I'm sorry. Their personal lives are their business. Thank you. I'm just here to remodel, redecorate, and really become an interior design master, which is what I became, frankly.
I think
if I do say so myself.
I would imagine so. For me, it's there's a lack of talent, right? I have a vision of what I want and I'm super excited about it. Yeah. And then I have no idea how to execute, and it's so discouraging.
Yeah. See, my problem is I see things that I like, and then I'm like, oh God, but is it going to match?
Yep.
Cause I don't want it to be too matchy matchy, but I want it to look like a cohesive thing, room that goes together.
Yep.
Frankly, I don't know if any of the shit in my house matches, but I've just sort of adopted, the motto that everything's a statement piece.
Yeah. There you go.
And then you don't have to worry about shit matching.
You should see how long it took me to agonize over whether I should actually paint this wall this color.
I love it.
Thank you.
I love an accent wall.
I'm happy with it, which is good, because oftentimes I do something and I'm like, I don't know, but I'll live with it.
Yeah. Story of my life.
Yeah. So tell me about, you mentioned Supergirl. Tell me about being an actor. How did you get into this?
Yeah, well, acting is just one of those things that I've always been really drawn to. I've always been drawn to performing. And, you know, I have a twin brother, and whenever we would watch TV shows or movies or cartoons or whatever, we were always acting out the stories, and our grandparents would make us these costumes, and, you know, dad would film the video. And playing dress up for me was a sort of opportunity to be able to wear clothes, portray characters that I identified with. Mm-hmm. And my parents couldn't really be oh, this is a problem. Cause they were just kind of it's just dress up. It's fine. He's fine. But for me, it was it was an opportunity to be a princess. And, you know, so I was always Dorothy or Wendy or Ariel or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think my love of acting really stems from that, and just a genuine love of playing dress up, because that's essentially what it is. We're a bunch of adult children playing dress up, on these crazy make-believe sets. And it's just been so much fun. And so with I acted through high school, and, you know, just school productions, nothing crazy. And it was just one of those crazy things where it was an opportunity of we had known somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody in casting. And they had said they were looking for a trans actress to play a dancer or a dance student for this episode of Royal Pains. This was my senior year of high school, and I had, you know, done dance all through high school. And so I was like, okay, yeah, sure. So we auditioned. It wasn't a process of they were we knew you, so we just cast you. It was, so I auditioned, and then I went to New York and I auditioned again in front of, casting for a callback. And then I went back to New York, auditioned in front of producers a third time. And then got the part. And so that was great. And that shot in Brooklyn. So I got to spend 2 weeks in New York City, which I was oh, the lights.
Yeah.
Live, you know, my little, my get off the bus fantasy. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so I just fell in love with it. And I remember the thing that struck me the most was film sets and how it was just such a different, I mean, especially coming from like high school theater where like picture it. We're doing a one act performance of Henry V, which for those of you who are not theater nerds is not a show you can do in one act. Mm-hmm. Just by the way, but God bless us. We tried and we had one set piece and it was like, it was kind of like a utility ladder arcway that you could like climb up on for like hardware and stuff. I swear they must have gotten it at like the Home Depot and they did not dress it. They like threw a sheet over it and they were like, that's the door. Mm. And I was like, and we had like drums and stuff. They were just recycling cans with saran wrap over them. We didn't paint them or nothing. They were recycling can blue right there on stage. And it was like also set in like 1970.
Oh, okay.
But like not. It was the most bizarre show.
Is this like a theater teacher that's like, I've got ideas, or did they just not care?
Yes. But then it was also, so the set design was done by our stage manager, who was one of the students.
Okay.
So one of the students designed the set, but of course, like an adult had to sign off on that. Like some adult was like, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just like this. And it was, oh my, it was during our big, we did a Shakes a Year. It was like the 178th anniversary of Shakespeare or something, which like, first of all, 178 is not significant.
Yeah. That's, if I had to come up with like how can I make a number that doesn't seem like it's just an even number? That's definitely one I would think of.
178. It's a stupid random number that means nothing. But they were like, oh my God, it's the 178th anniversary of Shakespeare. All of our shows this year are going to be about Shakespeare. So we did a one act performance of Henry V. And I was Catherine. And so I spoke French. But they cut every other scene of mine. And so the only scene of mine was me, like, and this was for a competition, mind you. This was for the one-act competitions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, me and I had, like, this weird, awful blue 70s hippie dress on, but, like, also a crown. Nothing went together during that show. And I, like, you know, wander on stage, and it's, like, you know, my friend teaching me English words because I'm going to marry, you know, Prince Henry or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we're just completely random. And in the middle of the play, this woman we've never seen before comes out and is like, Dund! And then I like wander off. And then I'm not seen again until the end where I just come and marry Henry after the war.
Nailed it.
Bizarre. Nailed it.
Yeah.
We didn't win, in case you were wondering.
Oh, no.
We did not win that competition. Spoilers. But yeah, so it just going from like a production like that to being on a TV set in this hospital where everything looks real. All the details are meticulously placed. I mean, they built an entire summer camp, like set, like a cabin for one scene. And it looked just like you were at summer camp. Like, oh, there's wet bathing suits on the bed. And, you know, like it was dirty, like a summer camp cabin. It was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you look up and there's no ceiling. And it was like the most trippy, bizarre thing. I was just like so impressed by the magnitude and the scale. And I just thought it was frankly magical. I was like, oh, my God, I want to do this forever. I want to do this. This is what I'm talking about. This is cool. And then, you know, naturally, I didn't act again for like, you know, 4 years.
Yeah.
But through that, I met my agents, who I'm still with, and we started working together. And I remember when they first asked me, you know, what do you like? What kind of shows do you like? I was like, I like Arrow. I really love that show. Cut 2 years later in the Arrowverse. I mean, listen, dreams are coming true.
Yeah.
But,
what season of Arrow was it on at that point?
Oh God, I don't know. I think 4. Okay. It must have been probably.
Feels like, I feel like time has passed too quickly. I feel like it wasn't that long ago that Arrow started.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, crazy. Oh my gosh. Actually, speaking of, while I'm still on this Shakespeare tangent, I have to tell you about, so one of my like final performances, I was the most senior member of the cast. Mm-hmm. We did Cry of Players, which is kind of like loosely about William Shakespeare.
Okay.
And the only other senior in the cast is my brother, right? And I've been doing the plays twice as long as him. So I'm like, oh, heck yeah, I'm going to get whatever, you know, part I want. Cause that's how, you know, casting works in high school. And they sat us down and they said, we both want you to play the lead, but they're married and we feel that would be inappropriate. So instead of me playing his wife, you know what they thought would be better?
What?
I love the hesitation in your voice. Like, what? They had me play my twin brother's mistress.
What?
Like, that's better. Our first scene is me standing behind him, reaching around him, buttoning his shirt back up. By the way, we have the same face. We're identical. And my graduating class was 68. So everybody in the audience knew exactly what they were watching.
So this is Game of Thrones is what's happening.
This was full, like, Game of Thrones. Like, we pushed a toddler out of a window. Yeah. Like, which coincidentally, at the time of this, I was trying to read Game of Thrones. And I got to that and I said, that's a little too close to home. No, that's where we're going to stop that. Mm-hmm. But let me, for those of you who are still confused, let me explain to you why that's so much worse. That means he married someone
right.
who was his sister and then went back to fuck his sister, which is so much worse.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely with you here. Was this the real reason? Like, or did they just like want you in a different role? Like, because that's absurd.
No, I have no idea. But you know what? Some of the best acting I've ever done. Because I kept the vomit in my mouth.
Yes. Yeah. I can imagine.
The cast list came up and I was like, but I did it.
Yeah.
Because the show must go on.
Truly. Did your brother stick to acting in any way?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He lives in Chicago now. He's brilliant. He just did his first film. He's really great. He went to school for acting. I did not.
Yeah.
So he's much better than me, frankly. he's phenomenal. He does I went and saw him. The last thing I saw him in was he did Macbeth. No, not Macbeth. Macbeth? I think it was. He was Macbeth, of course. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I mean,
he has a way about him of just playing angry straight men.
Yeah.
He does it well. Bravo.
But he's not angry though, right? Himself.
Sure. No. I don't know what he has to be angry about. He got the lead.
Yeah.
I'm the one who had to play, who got the downgrade to play his mistress.
You're right.
I'm mad. I'm still talking about it all these years later. I'll never stop.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he talks about it too. Maybe he's like,
I'm scarred. I don't know about him,
yeah.
but that keeps me up at night.
Remember that time I had to pretend that
redress
I
redress you.
So you're twins.
Yeah.
You're both actors. Mm-hmm. Is this are you very close?
Yeah. Yeah. We've always been really close. It was, mm-hmm. it was always, you know, people, the number one question I get asked, they're like, can you feel each other's pain?
Yeah.
I'm like, yes. No. like, yeah, yes. hurt Jonas, hurt. Like, I get myself like sunburns.
Yeah.
While he's at a job interview, just to fuck with him.
While he's at an audition for a role that you don't want to be his mistress for.
There's surprisingly many. Listen, I could build a career just helping my brother's mistress. Jesus. No. So the number one question I get asked is people always want to know if, you know, what was his reaction when you came out to him as trans? You know, did he ever, did he have a problem with it? And I never had to. I never had to talk to him about it. And we really don't talk about it even now.
Yeah.
Really. Cause it was never for us. That was never our concern. And I mean, you know, don't let me speak for him, but I think for him, it was never about like whether I was his brother, whether I was his sister. I think for us, the important part of that relationship is that, you know, that's my twin. Mm-hmm. And that's the person that I am closest to. In every sense of the word, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, Christmas. And I think that's what was important for both of us. It didn't really matter to him. He was like, regardless, that's my twin, and I'm going to support you either way.
Yeah.
And that's what he continued to do. And as we were trying to get our parents on board, and as we were struggling at school, he was always there protecting me and looking out for me and advocating for me.
That's amazing to have somebody, like basically your whole life, that's just like on board. Like that's just like totally supporting you.
Yeah. It's really great. It's nice to know you always have somebody in your corner.
Mm-hmm. Has it been hard to be like, apart? Were you like used to being together a lot?
No, because, you know, I think now it's gotten to a point where we were together so long, and I think both of us kind of resented the whole, like anytime anyone called us like the twins.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know about him, but like for me, that's like everything goes white. Yeah. Like, I just never liked that. I don't think he ever liked that. It was just like, we're two different people. Mm-hmm. And I never understand, like in film or anything, even in life, when people are dressing their twins identically.
Yeah.
Like, that's creepy bullshit.
I mean, straight out of a horror movie.
Like a set. Yeah. Seriously. I'm going to run them over with a tricycle. Anytime I see matching twins, I just feel like I have to roadkill for the greater good.
Yeah. I mean, people would understand.
I think so.
Yeah.
And you know what? More importantly, I think that would hold up in court.
Exactly.
Why did you, in cold blood, brutally murder a random set of twins? In my defense, Your Honor, I thought that they might be ghosts.
Yeah. Have you seen the photos? Did you see what they were wearing?
Did you see the matching bowl cuts, sir?
I rest my case. It's interesting to me because you I guess are in a position where you've never not had at least one person like that's just been there for you.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to ask how that feels because it's how you've always felt. But
yeah, I'm very lucky. You know, I'm always the first to say, like, you know, I've been very, very privileged and very, very blessed with the family support that I got.
Yeah.
And even from outside of my immediate family, with grandparents even, the support was always there. Mm-hmm. And I was just reading some of my dad's journals, actually, for a writing project I'm doing. He sent them to me. And he was writing about the first summer that we went back to, because I was born in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. When we went back to New York and we were visiting the grandparents, and my grandpa had called me Wyatt and apologized. And my dad was writing, the first thing my dad had to get used to was the sight of his father apologizing to a child, which was like bizarre for him. And second, you know, I got up and I said, no, it's okay. I know it's hard. Thank you very much for trying. But I always had, like, even when they got it wrong, they were apologetic, and it, at least to my face, none of my family was outwardly malicious or telling me that I was bad, going to hell, any of the normal stuff that you would expect. It was always, I mean, one of the first memories that sticks out for me is there was like a bookstore, like a sale. And there was a little table outside where this lady was selling books. And there was like this pink, sparkly mermaid book. I don't know what it was about now. It doesn't matter. It was pink and sparkly. And I wanted it because I'm like this. And the woman was like, oh, you can't have that. That's for little girls. You're a little boy. That's not for you. Devastated. Mm-hmm. A couple minutes later, my grandma comes back holding the book and, like, you know, just gives it to me. She's just like, don't worry about it. And I'm sure she told that woman off.
Yeah.
But because it was, it would be uncharacteristic of Judy not to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, and I was like 3 or 4 years old. So even as the world around me is like telling me, like, no, this isn't for you. This is what you're supposed to be doing. You can't do the stuff you like to do. My family, or at that point, my grandma, was like, it doesn't, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
It's a book. You're 3. You like it? Here, reading's good. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to always, you know, have that, especially from her. And I would go over and I would stay with her on weekends, and she would help me, you know, we'd do my Barbie's hair and dress them up all nice and set them up on the couch and watch, you know, like Disney princess movies. And it was nice to have somebody who was always supportive of me and who believed me and was unfazed by, you know, it's only a problem if you're looking at it through the lens of, oh, what is this child supposed to be doing?
Right.
Oh, well, this child isn't doing what I expected it to. Well, it is a person after all. So first of all, we should stop probably calling babies its.
Yeah.
It's like, no, like they're people, they like things they don't like, especially as we get older and we can discern between what we like and what we don't like. Why are we forcing kids to do things they don't like?
Yeah.
It makes them miserable. It was very obvious it was making me miserable. So what, you're just doing it to make yourself feel better?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so, I mean, you grew up in a situation where you had to sort of tell the world who you were.
Yeah.
And you had to have the confidence to be able to be like, no, this is me. Even though you're telling me it's not.
Yeah.
Like that must take an incredible amount of just like strength, right?
Well, yes and no, because it does. But I think that strength is attributed to a strength that I think all children innately have, because we come into this world like covered in blood, naked, screaming,
yeah,
without any of the notions of what is good or bad. All we know is what we like, what we don't like, what feels right, what feels wrong. And as soon as we're able to identify that, we start to. It's one of the first choices that we make for ourselves, is deciding, who am I? Who do I get to be? And so for me, it all came from a feeling of instinct. And it was very, very natural. And it felt like the most natural thing in the world to me, because it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that boys couldn't turn into girls, and I didn't know that it was wrong or weird or a sin, which, by the way, it's not anywhere in that book. And it was through people's reactions that I realized that, oh, is this not normal? Is it? But then, you know, as I'm receiving this support, and I think having like my grandmother and having Jonas there really, really helped me. And my mother was the same way. My dad took a little bit longer, but I think it's harder for dads.
Yeah.
Honestly, especially just the way that we raise boys in our society, the way we talk about boys, the way fathers are expected to behave, and, you know, all the not show emotion, don't do this. This is what boys do. This is what girls do. And men are punished for any resistance to the masculine.
Yeah.
And so any outright rejection of it is like the cardinal sin, I feel like. And it's like, oh, what do you mean you don't want to be a man? Yeah. What do you mean you want to be a lady? like
makes no sense.
Exactly. So my dad was like,
sorts of great things.
Totally. He's like, wait, so you have a penis and you want to get rid of it? Why? They're so great. And I'm like, yes, but we'll get to that later. Well, that's disgusting. But you know, it's the way that I think we raise boys really affects the way that fathers are able to wrap their minds around this. And for my dad, it became a thing of just like, he had such set expectations for what boys and girls were supposed to be like. And for context on my dad, he grew up really, really poor, really, you know, conservative. And his main concern was always, you know, be aware of what you're presenting, you know, be concerned with what the neighbors are thinking, and get to the other side of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did all that. And then when he, you know, and I was reading all like the Christmas newsletters that he would send out to the family, and watching those progress and change was very funny.
Yeah.
And just even like hearing like, oh yes, Wyatt's so dramatic. Oh yes, he loves his Barbies. LOL, he'll be a fashion designer. I'm like, I mean, I was wafting queer from the start.
Yeah.
There was never a chance. But in seeing how those changed and eventually just stopped coming, he didn't know what to do with it. And he didn't know how to talk to it about it to family or to other dads, or which is a lot of the work that he does now. But he, the number one thing he says is that he had to ask himself what he was so afraid of. Mm-hmm. And he had to really sit down with himself and get comfortable with being uncomfortable and be like, this is part of being a dad. It is my responsibility to make sure that my child is safe. And if my own shortcomings, if my own prejudices, set expectations are what's getting in the way of my child being happy, then that's what I need to change. And that's my responsibility to change myself, not my child, because that wouldn't have been fair to me. And it's not fair to any child. And I think it's and I understand why, because it's hard work to do. And it's really hard to ask yourself and face what you're afraid of. Why am I so afraid of my son being my daughter? That's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I think it's the responsibility of parents to do that, frankly, before they decide to be parents, mm-hmm. because that's the thing I feel like with unconditional love and support. Like, you let your child be who they are, you love them regardless, or you're not ready to be a parent. Mm-hmm. Which is somehow like a weird, I'm like,
It does.
How are you a parent and you're not like, I'm going to love my child, but if this child ever puts on a dress, it's out the door.
Yeah.
First of all, who wouldn't like more leg room? First of all. Okay.
Seems great.
They are. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
It feels like such a not controversial thing to say that, like, a parent should love a child unconditionally. But I guess a person would come out and say this, but I do think there are a lot of people that their actual mindset is more like, I want a mini version of me, like, right? Like, or some version of that. Like, I want my child to be more successful than me, or I want my child to be like some sort of symbol of, yeah.
And it's like, no, I'm not a parent myself, but like, I feel like you got to let all that shit go. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not dolls.
Right.
They're like, back to The Sims. Play The Sims if you want a little mini version of you. You can be whatever you want in that. But, you know, I think it's our responsibility as people to, when we have children, to let our child be whoever they are. And the most important thing, and this is what my mother always said, and she said, I didn't care what you did. I didn't care who you were. All my main concern was, when you and Jonas come home, I want home to be a safe space. And I always want you guys to have a safe place to come back to. And that's the right answer.
Yeah.
That's what home and parents and what family should be. It should be a safe space. And the fact that it's not for so many queer people is really, really heartbreaking. Yeah. Because it's something that we all deserve. And we all, frankly, I think we should have a right to. We have a right to feel safe in our own families.
Yeah.
And shouldn't have to worry like, oh gosh, if mom knows that I tried on her heels while she was out, is she going to kick me out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's genuinely one of the most, like, devastating impact. One of the biggest things that has such a devastating impact on, like, our entire society is that we all, some certainly way more than others, undergo like a lot of trauma as kids because of that simple thing. Just like, we just needed somebody to support us, and let us be who we were going to be. And that's it. That's all it took.
Yeah, giving it's a weird thing with giving children autonomy, mm-hmm. I think, and really respecting that a child is a person, and respecting that in some cases, certainly not all, you're not going to let a child eat candy for dinner, but in most reasonable cases, children do know what's best for them. Mm-hmm. And children, like I said, all you have is a compass pointing, do I like this or do I not like this? And so if I put on a dress or pants or whatever, and I like it, I'll know. If I don't like it, I will also know. Mm. And if I don't like it, don't then make me put on the dress again, Linda. Like, it's not that important. Mm-hmm. And this, the same thing goes for, you know, like little girls. If little girls don't want to wear dresses, don't make the girl wear the dress. Mm-hmm. Let the girl wear pants.
Yeah.
I thought we were past this a long time ago.
Yeah, it's I think part of it, too, has to be that, like, I feel like the baby stage probably does some damage here, because I think parents get used to being completely in control, and it slowly happens that you're not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a shift.
Yeah.
It's a shift. Yeah. You have to go from, again, I'm not a parent, so I don't know. But yeah, you're going from, you know, really having full responsibility over every single thing. And then as we grow, you have to kind of let that person decide for themselves who they're going to be. Mm-hmm. And that's not even just a queer thing. I think that's everybody. You know, if a child is more drawn to painting or creative stuff, you know, like, yes, encouraging that kind of behavior and just letting kids play and explore and try new things. And it all comes back to just having like expectations mm-hmm. around children. And it's not fair, frankly, force those on people.
Really? I feel like you can extrapolate that outside of even parenting, like let people live their own life. Like, you know, let people be who they want to be, you know,
a shocking amount of problems can be traced back to people not minding their own goddamn business.
Yeah.
I feel like it's one of those memes that it's like society, if people just minded their GD business, and it's like flying cars and all that shit.
I guess, you know, you gotta struggle. It would be too easy.
Yeah, apparently. Right? Apparently it'd be too easy without the childhood trauma. Call me crazy.
Somebody at some point set the difficulty level to hard. They were like, this game would be way too boring if it was set on easy mode.
Yeah.
So you said your dad like talks to other dads now, like specifically about this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So something that my dad and I started doing a little bit in high school, but really more as I was in college, was we would go around to community centers and middle schools and high schools, and we spoke at Harvard Medical, and we would go around and we'd share our experience. In 2015, we had a book come out called Becoming Nicole, The Transformation of an American Family, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And ding. and it's you know, taken from these journals that my dad wrote when we were in seventh grade. We had to flee our town and move south. I had to go back in the closet. And my dad stayed behind to keep his job at the university. And so for 6 years, we only saw our dad on weekends. And so he would take the bus down and back. And on those bus rides, he would write just about what he was going through, what was going on. And he started showing these journals to people. And they were like, you have to do something with this. And so it turned into a book. And it was written by a science writer for the Washington Post, Amy Ellis Nutt. And it looks at the social aspects. It looks at the science of being trans, and it's really more about my parents than it is about me. It's not, you know, I'm there, but it was really brilliant. And my dad and I would start going around speaking, and we'd bring the book, and you know, we'd sign it after and everything, and we'd have questions, and we'd do Q&As with other families, other parents, other trans people, family members, friends, communities, and just share what our experience was. Me as a young trans person, because when I started my transition, they really weren't doing a lot of medical transitioning for younger kids. Mm-hmm. It was always something that happened when you were older, when you were an adult. And so it was, you know, a lot of bushwhacking for us. So I was talking about that experience, and my dad would talk about exactly what I told you, you know, having to come to terms with it and having to let go of his expectations and having to ask himself what he was so afraid of. And he talks about, you know, the family's responsibility to sorting their own shit out. Mm-hmm. And looking out for your child and being like, your number one priority now is your child and keeping your child safe. And if your child is not safe from you, you need to fix that shit right away. Mm-hmm. And being safe extends far beyond just physical harm, you know, having your basic needs met. Love and support is a basic need, mm-hmm. which is, you know, shockingly, people are like, you have clothes, food, and a roof over your head. You're fine. It's like, yes, but I'd like a hug.
Yeah.
Like that's a necessity.
There's a whole study on monkeys, right?
Seriously. Yeah. I don't know. What was the outcome of that study?
I'm going to butcher this, but like basically when I think they starved the monkeys and then they gave them a choice of like, here's food and whatever, but it's like a metal shape. And here's comforting, like, thing you can hug.
Yeah, you go to the soft, nice thing.
And they go to the nice, soft, comforting thing, yeah.
Yeah, no one and frankly, also, I mean, maybe this is besides the point, but that's my problem with modern interior design, too. I can't get into the sharp shapes. Call me crazy, but I don't want my couch to look sharp.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, maybe I was a part of that study in a past life, but maybe. I like soft things.
Me too. It's couches. This couch right here, it's very comfortable.
It looks very cushy.
Yeah. Always. I don't understand seats.
I think I might
couches.
Have the same couch in pink.
Really? Yeah. It's great, right?
I'm like looking at it. And I love it. Love it. Highly recommend.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's what we talk about. And he, you know, he gets up in front of, you know, crowds of like hundreds of people and he bares his soul and he cries and he's like, this is what happened to my family. I didn't live with my wife. I didn't live with my kids because of other people's closed-mindedness, because other people felt a type of way about my child. Mm-hmm. And that really pushed both of us to, and it was nice because then that kind of became a bonding activity for us. And we were able to kind of make up some of the time that we didn't get to spend together. And, you know, now I get to travel around with my dad and, you know, lots of time in airports with my dad and just, you know, spend some time together after not living together for 6 years.
Yeah. That's incredible. What happened that you had to leave?
So I started transitioning when I was in first grade. And we did a very slow sort of thing. Like it was like that first year was really like, okay, maybe you can wear a pink t-shirt like every other day, maybe.
Yeah.
Like it was like baby steps. Mm-hmm. Like people talk about it. Like they like pulled me out of school and like stuck a shot of estrogen in my butt. Like it was such a slow pain. First of all, I would have loved if they'd have done that first of all, because I was like, come on, let's pick up the pace. Because everyone was moving at such a slow as death pace because everyone wants to make sure. They're like, I'm sorry, are you sure you're trans?
Yeah.
Maybe you're gay. It's bizarre to me how overly cautious people are, because like being trans is like the worst thing they could imagine. Mm. And it was a slow process, and sort of every school year we'd tack on a new thing, like, okay, now you can grow your hair. Okay, now you can do this. And in fifth grade, I was fully transitioned, and, you know, I was wearing skirts. That was a big thing for me. I wasn't allowed to wear skirts even until I was in fifth grade. And everything was fine. And I was using the girls' bathroom because, you know, all the girls are my friends. Because that's the other thing. Kids don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. Kids really don't care because they don't know that. Again, same thing as me. They didn't know it was supposed to be wrong.
Yeah.
They just, you know, I was like, and it was part of my introduction. I said, hi, I'm Wyatt. I'm a boy who wants to be a girl. What's your name? They're like, well, I don't know. Hi, I'm Ryan. I like the color red and trucks.
Yeah.
Like it was on the same level as trucks. Or maybe trucks are just on the same level as profound gender experiences.
I mean, look, you know, it takes a lot of courage, I think, to like trucks in a car society.
Brave.
Yeah.
Brave, frankly. Yeah. And frankly, it is brave to even drive near one after Final Destination. I can't.
I hate driving near trucks all the time. Yeah, it's terrible. Especially in L.A.
But yeah, and everything was fine. So I was using the multi-stall girls' bathroom, and there was a student in my class, a boy, mind you, and his grandfather was a part of a special interest Christian right group, as they always are. And they did not think that it was good that a boy was using the girls' bathroom. So their answer was to have a boy use the girls' bathroom. And they sent the grandson in after me as a political statement. And he said that my grandpappy says we don't have to have any faggots in our school. And at that point, the school stopped working with us. And they'd been fully cooperative up until this point. And they, and as soon as they started getting pressure from this grandfather and from this group, they were like, well, why can this boy use the girls' bathroom and this boy can't? They pulled me from the girls' bathroom and they put me in the staff bathroom away from all the other kids. And they said, well, if Nicole's the problem, then Nicole just won't use the girls' bathroom anymore. And what that did was that sent a message to the rest of the community that said, hey, here is this child who is so different from the rest of you that they cannot be permitted to exist in the same public spaces, which feels like something we've done before. I feel like every time a social issue comes up or a civil rights issue comes up, the first thing to happen is people lock the bathrooms. And people get like, okay, now where is this different person going to pee? Because that's what I'm frankly concerned about. And they should have their own bathroom. Like, why do we keep going back to that? No!
Yeah.
Separate is not equal. It's never been equal. It never worked.
Why is it bathrooms too? It's like the worst place.
Because people, I guess, get in a weird state of vulnerability when their pants are around their ankles.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. People are shy poopers. But I'm like...
I have a condition. I just can't go if I'm worried that there might be somebody I don't understand.
I have a condition. If there's a possibility there's a tranny in the bathroom, I just can't go. My delicate stomach. It's so weird. But yeah, so they pulled me and they sent a message to the rest of the school and they just stopped working with us. And it was never the same after that. And we kept trying to reopen these channels of dialogue and it only got worse. They gave me a bodyguard to make sure I didn't go into the girls' bathroom because sometimes I'd slip in because, you know, rebel. And so they gave me a bodyguard who was just an adult who followed me around and made sure I was using the right bathroom. And if I got up to go to the bathroom from class, the teacher would stop me at the door and tell me to wait for whoever's following me that day because it was always different. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the bullies are roaming the halls free. They don't get a bodyguard to make sure they don't bully people. And the bodyguard didn't even do shit because the bullies were so bold as to keep harassing me in the direct presence of said bodyguard.
Yeah, I don't think bodyguard is the right word here.
They called it the eyes on program. I called it the eyes shut program because their eyes always seemed to be shut when I was getting blatantly harassed in the hallways.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was just, if we'd go to a field trip or somewhere, the school would call ahead and they'd say, oh, hey, here's this student. You know, I know it looks like a girl. Don't let them use the girls' bathroom at your facility. And not everywhere has a gender neutral facility. So, you know, sometimes you just hold it. Mm-hmm. And so it just got to the point where it wasn't, we were going to go. I think the final straw was I was in the outing club and I was going to go on a whitewater rafting trip. And it was a camping trip. And they said, well, she can come, but she can't stay in a tent with the other girls. And I was like, these are all my best friends that are going. Like, I've slept in the same bed as all of these girls. And they're like, no, can't do it. Okay, well, what if we get a signed permission slip? We sign from every parent saying that they're okay with Nicole coming on the trip. Nope, can't do it. And it became very, very clear that they were not looking to change what they were doing. So my parents and I, well, my mother and Jonas and I packed up and we moved to Portland. And my dad stayed behind in Orono to keep his job. And so that's where that all came from. And then we ended up filing suit against the school district on the grounds of unlawful discrimination. And that went to the Maine State Supreme Court. And it set a precedent because that was the first time that a state Supreme Court had ruled in favor of a transgender family. Because this was all happening 2007, 2008. Wow. And as of 2005, sexual orientation and gender identity were a protected class under the Maine Human Rights Act. Mm. However, that court case still took 5 years to get settled, even though it was already on the books, mm-hmm. because the justices, you know, they wanted to be like, okay, But do we follow the law in this case? Should we? Because no one wanted to be the first people to decide which side of the fence this issue was going to fall on. And we just got lucky that, frankly, that that the right people were on the bench at the right time. But it set a precedent for other cases like that, because what was special about that is that it wasn't special at all. Mm-hmm. The exact same thing is happening to trans kids all over the country. And frankly, still in Maine, I still hear from kids in especially more rural parts of the state that are like, my school's not letting me go where I need to go. And I'm like, I did not fucking fight a 5-year lawsuit for this shit. I mean, I just found out there's a anti-trans sports bill in Maine right now, trying to ban transgender girls from school sports. And I'm like, we went through all this shit before. Why are we going back to it? It's rehashing the same stuff over and over and over again. And it's the same conversation. It's like with the bathrooms, it's just trying to decide, okay, can we still discriminate against these people? Yeah. Okay. Well, can we discriminate against these people? Okay. Well, surely these people don't deserve rights. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. Were you involved in the decision to file the suit?
Not really. I think that was more of my parents' decision. Like, I obviously signed off on it.
Yeah.
But I think that was more their call, because I was in sixth grade. That wasn't really my call to make anyway.
How did you feel about it at the time?
I felt that it was appropriate.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I have to leave my school. I have to leave my friends. I have to move away from my dad, away from my house that I loved. I had a whole giant forest in my backyard that I got to explore and have a great time climbing trees. I had to leave all of that behind to go back in the closet and not tell anybody who I was and be ashamed of who I was.
Yeah.
So I was like, good. Yes, we should. They fucked us.
Well, cause I feel like, I mean, that's an amazing thing, right? I imagine this is something that you're proud of.
Oh, absolutely.
When did you feel like that source? Like, when did you feel that pride of like, hey, I'm actually doing something here?
When we won.
Yeah.
When we won, I was like, oh, fuck it.
Yeah.
Fuck yes, we fucking won. And it felt very good to have that on the books again and have that doubled down on. And it's just another, you know, any legal victory for queer issues is a major victory, because mm-hmm. we need all of them that we can get right now, frankly. Especially in regards to bathrooms, because people get weird about it. Mm-hmm. And people are just like, and this is the weird thing with bathrooms. And I had forgotten what I was going to say earlier, and I just remembered, so I wanted to go back to it. It's a weird thing about bathrooms, because people are so concerned that like people are just going to like walk in and like molest somebody in broad daylight. Which, couple things. I want you to tell me the last time you ever made eye contact with another person in a public restroom. Mm. Let alone talk to them, spoke to them, had a conversation. Who's molesting people in a bathroom in broad daylight in public?
Yeah.
Second, there is no bouncer. You do not have to dress up like a woman to go into the woman's bathroom. There is oftentimes not even a door. You just walk in. There is no guard. Third, let's entertain for a moment. And I don't want to use the word entertain, because I think it's a ludicrous argument that should not be entertained. But if somebody did think that transgender legislation, allowing trans people to be who they are and being recognized for who they are, if someone did think that that granted them any kind of leniency, loophole, whatever, and they put on a dress, went into the public girls' restroom and sexually assaulted someone, the sexual assault is still illegal.
Yeah.
It's still a crime. Letting trans people be who they are in no way, shape, or form legalizes sexual assault or harassment in any sense of the word. It's just like this weird, like someone saw like Silence of the Lambs once and is like, oh geez, they all, oh my god, are they all making skin suits out of women? Well, we have to protect ourselves.
I'm imagining just like a horde of sexual assaulters just like waiting for legislation to be passed so that they're allowed to go in
Just a horde of sexual assaulters and sex offenders, like at the Forever 21, buying cute little dresses and being like, ooh, today's the day.
Oh, I can't wait for those justices to make that ruling.
Oh, I can't wait for trans people to get to be people and then I'll have a loophole. Yes. Like, what? It's bizarre. It's a bizarre, and it's a non-issue, and it's all smoke and mirrors to distract from what's actually happening, which is, you know, Republican congressmen having sex with little boys in bathrooms.
Yeah.
Which is much more common.
Yeah. When you asked, when's the last time I made eye contact with somebody in a bathroom, it made me remember that when I was a kid, there was an army recruitment guy who went next to me in a urinal and tried to recruit me into the army as we were going to the bathroom, which was
no joke. That's my nightmare. That's my hell. That is my personal hell.
It was not great
being at a urinal and having someone try to recruit you for the army.
Yeah.
First of all, I have to imagine that having anybody even just standing next to you at the urinal is awful.
It was empty too. He had a choice. Yeah.
That's even worse.
Yeah.
That's so much worse. And then the army will be like, why is nobody signing up?
I was like,
I can't get to the bottom of this.
I told him, I'm going to school for film. And he was like, oh, really? Yeah.
Bathrooms, man.
They're weird.
People don't know how to behave in them. Apparently. I'm like, no, you keep your head down. You look at your shoes and you don't talk to anybody.
Yeah. I will say, just complete aside at this point, my favorite thing about masks is being able to wear a mask in a bathroom. It makes me feel so much better about
being there. It gives me a little bit of privacy, I feel like.
It's just a little bit of like, I feel like I'm just a little bit protected by from the particles, you know?
Yeah, like it's like I feel like the particles, yes. I was going to say from the shame.
The shame.
But listen,
Yeah. Anyway.
Listen, well, now, you know, with the masks, you can go into the bathroom, make as big a mess as you want. They're not going to know who did it.
Yeah. This is the masked mess maker strikes again.
New on Fox. Singer. It's a little old.
Are we going to allow masks in bathrooms anymore?
You can't say that because someone's going to take that seriously.
Oh, boy.
Someone's going to start a movement.
Yeah, I forgot they already don't like that.
Some anti-masker is going to be like, you're right. We need accountability in bathrooms.
Facial recognition for all bathroom entrants.
No, that's my hell.
So you had to move. This is obviously it turns out okay in the end, but this is a heartbreaking story. I mean, you had to move, you had to go back into the closet. I mean, how long did that last?
2 years.
I can't imagine.
You know, it was a complete shift in how I interacted with my peers.
Yeah.
Because in elementary school and in sixth grade, I had never had to worry about who I, like, yes, like people were bullying me because of who I was, but I got to be who I was.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to feel like that was something that I ever needed to hide. Mm-hmm. Because that was something that I never had from a very early age. You know, I was like 3-4 years old when I came out to my parents because I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. I was like, well, why shouldn't I tell my parents? Obviously, my caregivers should know what's going on with me. So then having to actively conceal that from classmates. And you know how it is being like a new kid in school. Everyone wants to know, oh, why'd you move? What are your old friends like? What was your old school like? Like, where are you coming from? And I couldn't tell them any of that. And so I just kind of shut down for 2 years. And I didn't really have as many friends. I stopped having sleepovers and I stopped going over to friends' houses. And I stopped all of that because I just did not know how to navigate friendships while also actively not telling them such a big part of who I am.
Yeah, how do you connect with people when you can't share yourself?
Exactly. It's like it's a big part of my history of how I've lived my life, the lens through which I've lived my life. And I can't share that with anybody. So how am I going to really have meaningful relationships with any of them? Mm-hmm. I was, I was in an acting troupe. That was one thing I did. I was in an acting troupe, an all-girls acting troupe. And one of my classmates was in the group too. And one time we were walking down the stairs and she told me, yeah, gee, it's so nice to have you in the group. You know, you couldn't be here if you were trans. And I was like, and I had the moment. I was like, if I throw this bitch over the railing, it'll look like an accident. And I was like, ha, 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 good thing I'm not. That's me. Good old cisgender Nicole. Ah, you can count on her. It was like that was like the whole world stopped. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I was like, I don't know if she read an article, like there were, cause there were newspaper articles like written about our family. Like we tried to keep our name out of them, but cause the grandfather was, he was on a full tilt, like media frenzy, like look at what this school's doing, articles, newspapers, op-eds, the whole nine yards. It was for a total. And I mean, you want to talk about evil for a second. Let's talk about subjecting a fifth grader to all of that. Mm-hmm. I've still never spoken to this man or been in the same room as this man. And that is what is the most mind-boggling to me, mm-hmm. is that someone could just completely upheave, ruin, destroy my life without ever being in the same room as me, without ever having to look me in the eye and tell me what he's doing. And I find out years later, just a couple years ago, he was arrested for vandalizing some pride monuments in Bangor.
Yeah, it's not surprising.
And we're like, Paul, back at it again. But frankly, I think the best way that we can get back at this guy is because he did spark a landmark case that set a precedent for transgender rights in this country.
Yeah.
I think that we should offer him a spot to be a grand marshal of a pride parade. I think that'd really make him mad.
Change maker.
I think we should just be like, thank you so much for everything you've done for our community. You have really moved the gay agenda forward.
Pioneer.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, listen, the best revenge is a happy ending, but the best revenge is apparently making him ride a float.
Yeah. I've never ridden a float before.
I've never ridden a float before, but I've like ridden in a parade, like in a car.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine a float's fucking cool.
I feel like surely even this guy would on some level be like, that's kind of cool to get on a float right now.
Right.
he would absolutely deny it to himself. But
oh,
like,
of course.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd have to pry on it.
This is unclean feelings. Can't enjoy floats.
Lord, what do I do about wanting to be on this parade float? I know it's a sin. God being like, no, it's the fuck not. What is wrong with you? Do you think I care?
What do you think floats are for, dude?
That's the number one thing I'm always, whenever people are like citing religion or anything for their bigotry and for their hatred, and when they're being like, oh, God hates this, I'm like, I'm sorry. You're trying to tell me that the furnace of all creation, first of all, is a man. Second, cares about one, you. Two, what's in your pants? The creator of everything, of the entire universe, cannot stand the thought of a trans person. That is what keeps it up at night. Okay. Sure. Not like Dormammu or something, but like, no, trannies. That's the nightmare.
Yeah. It's also just like, I mean, we're like, we're preaching to each other right now, but it's so like, cause I don't know, I guess you don't always like, cause you think about how dumb it is, but you don't always like really just drill down on every single level about how dumb
it
is.
Well, when you sit with it for a second, you're like, and this is what I always tell people when they're like, Jesus says it's wrong. And I'm like, okay, well, when he comes back, we can ask him. Yeah. But for right now, it's been 2021 years. Mm. I'm going to take my own cue on this one. And when he gets here, we'll ask. We can go together and we'll ask.
It's like a mean older sibling being like, mom's going to be mad at you. It's like, all right, why don't we wait for her then?
That is exactly what it is, actually. That's exactly what it is. Mom's got, I'm telling.
Yeah.
Then tell.
Oh, man.
We're really out here solving the world's problems.
We are. I don't know why. Like, if everyone just listened to this podcast, I feel like we'd be, it'd be done.
Listen.
Yeah.
We just, boom, solved transphobia.
Man, it's just, I guess it's just a marketing issue at this point. We just need to get this out.
That is the number one issue I've noticed with the church is its marketing.
So, I mean, this is clearly like, this is something that, that means a lot to you, not just sort of, you know, like, you know, the argument of it, but like the advocating of it.
Yeah. I think advocation is right.
Huh. Doesn't sound right to me, but
I believed you.
Well, there you go. That's I needed to believe in myself there. If I just said it, nobody would have questioned it. You care about advocating for these things. Like yeah. Is this something that you like to be this person, or do you feel like I wish that I didn't have to be this person?
It's both.
Yeah.
You know, I am very happy with who I am, and I'm very happy to do this work, and because it, you know, it's a part of me, it's a part of my history, and I, especially having this platform, you understand. Having a platform, you kind of feel like you have a bit of a responsibility to talk about things that matter and share what you've learned with the people who are subscribing to what you have to say. But on the other hand, absolutely, I don't want to keep doing this. It's the same conversation over and over again. And every time a new bill is introduced or a new piece of legislation is put forth, that is just a rewording of the same shit we've been arguing with before. And I just, now my response has been, I don't know how else to explain to people that they should care about other people. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it's boiled down to. Is it just, we can throw science and we can throw faith and we can throw all of it around and we can keep tossing them back and forth. But at the end of the day, it all boils down to just caring about other people. And also minding your own fucking business. It's just, I'm like, I don't know how to explain that to people. And that is true of every major social issue right now. I feel like at the root of all of it is people who just don't really care what happens to other people. And it's like, well, then I hate to break it to you. You might not be a good person.
Yeah, it's a frustrating conversation to have, I think, because I think probably the response is no, I'm doing this because I care about people, right?
And that's where the difficulty comes in.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that they are doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And that's what my dad told me. He always was like, Nicole, you have to have faith that most people are good people. You know, there's like 5% of people who are just nasty. You can't, you know, no point in giving them airtime, listening to what they have to say, because it doesn't matter. Most people in this world are good people and they just don't know it yet. Mm-hmm. And that's what he always told me.
Yeah.
And like for him, like he wasn't about to, you know, obviously like cuss at a trans person passing him on the street, but you know, he wasn't about to talk to them either.
Yeah.
He wasn't about to, you know, but now, you know, that's the community that came to his aid when we needed it. And that's what really opened his eyes when we were struggling, when our family had to split apart. It was, you know, the nose piercing, purple hair, mohawk, you know, queer community that came to our aid, and his, you know, what he had thought was his base, his, you know, the NRA kind of shooting. He was an NRA shooting sports instructor. He was a Republican. He's a veteran. He's like, all of that was just kind of like,
yeah.
And so that's what really sort of made him realize. But most of the people, again, are good people. They just don't know yet. And they just have to be given a reason to care. Mm-hmm. And that's what I talk about. I'm like, you do not know if your child is going to be trans. You do not know if your grandchild is going to be trans. If your child is going to fall in love with a trans person. Like, you don't know at what stage in your life you will be confronted with this, but I promise you, you will meet a trans person, especially now more than ever. We're coming out of the word work. We're not ashamed to be who we are anymore. We are more and more often and regularly proudly stating who we are and living our truths. And so it's more likely that you are going to have to encounter one of us at some point. And so you should, you know, get with that shit, because it's, again, not our problem. It's your problem that you have to deal with. That is your responsibility. If you are carrying that kind of negativity around, it is your responsibility to deal with it and get it in check.
Yeah. When you had to move, your dad had to stay, obviously so many reasons why that must've been difficult, but I imagine this, it also, did you ever feel like, and cause obviously this is not true, but did you ever feel like this is my fault? Like I'm the reason this is happening?
Of course, because I mean, even now it's, I kind of was like, I wasn't, obviously the reason was people's bigotry, and it was the school's fault and this grandfather's fault. But I recognized that I was kind of the catalyst for that. And I couldn't help but feel like some responsibility for breaking my family up. And that was a really hard thing to grapple with.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's reasonably, I understand that it had to do with my being trans. And yes, obviously if I wasn't trans, that wouldn't have happened. But also that wouldn't have happened if people minded their own business. That wouldn't have happened if people just trusted that I knew who I was. That wouldn't have happened if really they had gone about it in literally any other way, or just even looking at the law, knowing the law, being aware of the law, and telling this grandfather, yeah, you can sue us all you want, but as according to, you know, the Maine Human Rights Act of 2005, we're doing what we are legally obligated to do, which is allow this child to be who they need to be.
Mm-hmm. How much of was there, you said for 2 years you had to sort of like go back into the closet. Was there like a moment that it ended? Was it like when you finished school? Like,
yeah, when I went into high school, we started going to a private high school that was really, really progressive and was really proactive in making sure that it was a safe environment for me and for Jonas. And so my parents, you know, they were like, okay, yeah, you can be out at this school. And the challenge that I noticed was I had forgotten really how to come out to people.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't had to do it in so long. I was like, oh God, how do I even begin to broach this subject with my classmates?
Well, also for 2 years, that was like super negative. Like, super, can't do like, that.
No, my parents were like, if you tell somebody, we're going to have to move again. It was like under fear of like picking the whole family up and moving again. Mm-hmm. This time to like probably California or something was what they said. But when I, so the first girl I came out to, was a girl I had grown close to. I went to Wayne Fleet. And so every, fall at the beginning of the school year, they'll send the grades out into the Maine wilderness to just like get along team building. They called it outdoor experience. My very first year, our guide got us lost in the woods. I was like, oh great. First year of high school, I'm going to die in the woods. But there was this girl I had gotten close to named Leah. And on the bus ride back, she came out to me as pansexual, actually. And so that was kind of like, oh, I know you're going to be a safe space.
Yeah.
And so then I was able, and totally fine. She was like, oh my God, that's awesome. She asked me like follow-up questions. And we like talked about it in a positive way. Mm-hmm. For the first time in ever, somebody thought me being trans was cool.
Yeah.
And that is kind of why I tell people why it's so important to make yourself known as a safe space. And that's something everybody can do. Everyone always wants to know, well, what can I do to help? Well, how can I be an advocate? I'm not an advocate. You share what you see on social media. You let people know that you're a safe space, because doing stuff like that makes it so much easier for a trans person who's going through all that, who doesn't even know how to begin to broach that subject.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, oh my God, thank you for kind of just like, you know, just kind of providing us a boost. We really need that, because you don't know what somebody's reaction is going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen people, you know, go from perfectly nice to, like I was a door-to-door canvasser for Equality Maine for a while. And my friend Austin, went to this one woman's door and she shook a cross in his face and slammed the door. I was like, I just wanted to like go back to that woman and be like, girl, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like you're using your, endlessly exhausting.
Yeah. Endlessly. I helped do phone calls for the, I don't even remember, Yes on One or No on One. It was the gay marriage thing.
It switched. Yeah. Like yeah. I remember one year it was yes. The other year it was no.
I think it was no, right? Because the governor made it legal and they were trying to knock it down. And so we were trying to, we lost that one.
Yes, because it was no on one that we lost. Yeah. And then a couple years later, it was a yes on one because they want, then it was more of a like legalize it. And so we were like, right. Yeah. And that, because I remember the no on one had the green posters and the yes on one had the orange posters.
And that was part of the problem too, is that it was confusing to like explain. And that was part of my problem. But I did have people yell at me over the phone about it.
It's really hard work.
Yeah.
Really, really hard work. I did phone baking for a while too. I can't do it. I have such phone anxiety.
Oh, but I mean, that's what, like, you know, that's what you have to deal with all the time when, in terms of like, just like any random person,
totally,
you have no idea
how they'll respond to who you are.
Yeah,
totally. Totally. So it's like, if you can let somebody know that you're a safe space, please do, because I guarantee you it's so fucking nerve wracking. It's getting better. It's getting really, really better. I'm less and less hearing horror stories from kids about their families and about their parents and about their schools. But you know, there's a long way to go. As long as it's still happening, there's work to do.
Yeah. Well, you said you got onto, what was it? Royal Pains?
Yes.
I remember that show. It's funny too, because I also met Brendan when we played Sequester. And I had seen multiple things that he was in. And even just recently, he was like, oh yeah, I was in that movie, The Guest. And I was like, I loved that movie.
that's the best thing. Now, being friends with so many actors, it's fun to flip through the channel and be like, that's my boo. I was a couple years ago, I was sick and I was quarantining in a hotel room because I'd flown to Los Angeles and got like some crazy like throat virus.
Wow.
And so I like couldn't leave my hotel room and like I couldn't talk, I couldn't swallow. Like I was just sitting in my hotel room like a ghost, wheezing. And I was flipping through the channels and Jurassic World was on. And I got to see my good dear friend Katie McGraw get hoisted up into the air by a pterodactyl and dropped into a big megalodon tank and eaten alive. And I was like, you go, girl. Good to see you.
That's so fun.
It was great. It's one of my favorite things. And I say my friends, it's always just Katie. She's been in everything ever made.
Yeah.
I walked into, I was home for Christmas one year and I walked into my living room and my mother was watching Merlin and I was like, oh, she followed me home. It's weird. It's bizarre. It's a really bizarre feeling. Like just seeing people, you know, I'm like, I just saw you and now you're like, I have a terrible case of the fangirls.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, my friends are cool and I get excited when I see them and things.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. Were you always, you know, you always liked acting, but were you always into like watching movies and shows? Yeah.
Loved. I loved watching them. And what I was really specifically into is I loved like the animation and the special effects and the CGI. And I loved seeing how all that came together. And so I would sit in front of the TV with the remote, pausing frame by frame and looking at how the special effects changed from frame to frame. And just, I don't know what hours of that.
Wow.
Hours of just sitting there pausing a movie.
Were you ever interested in doing special effects?
Not really.
You just like,
I just like, I was kind of like, I was like, no, I'm just an appreciative viewer from afar. Like, I don't want to get involved. You do your thing, but like, I'm rooting for you guys.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So you did that show. That must've been like, as an actor, very validating to be like, wow, like this is a realistic ish, maybe, like career path for me. Before that, was it just like, was it a hobby? Was it like a pipe dream? Was it, or were you like, this is going to happen?
It was like a more of a pipe dream. It was like, if it happens, great.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah.
Doing Royal Pains kind of legitimized it for me. And I was like, oh, it's possible. Oh, maybe I could do this. But then I went to school at the university and, you know, was doing auditions after audition after audition, getting nothing. And by the time my junior year was over, I was really discouraged.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I maybe just got lucky that one time. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to happen again. And then just as I was kind of starting to get ready to give up, I got cast in Bit, which is the vampire movie that I did.
I watched that actually.
Wow.
It was very good.
I love it. Thank you very much.
It was very fun. Like genuinely.
It was so
really
much
cool.
fun. I was listening to The Wolfman of Mars. I was listening to the scores last night, actually, just because I'm like, it has a dope soundtrack. It's like kind of like 80s throwback. Like, I love it.
It has a very it's very stylized in that way. Yeah.
Totally. And Brad, the writer director, he credits himself with the single-handed revival that the song Rasputin has seen the last couple of years.
Oh yeah.
And I honestly think that's true. I give that to him. Like I don't know if you've seen like on TikTok, but like everybody's using that song now. And I'm like, and he's like, that was us. That was me. And I was like, yes, it was, Brad. Yes, it was.
Yeah, there you go.
But so I came out and I did that movie. And again, like that's still some of the most fun I've ever had getting to do that movie. It was amazing. And then while I was doing that, I got cast in Supergirl. And so it was just like the only way I can really describe it is kind of like Wizard of Oz sepia to Technicolor.
Yeah.
Like it was just hard 0 to 100 moment. Yeah. But it's possible. And it really made me realize, I was like, everything kind of does happen for a reason. You know, you're at the right place. You're at the right time. You will do what you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. If you put in the work, if you try, if you manifest it, if you work towards that, it is possible. And so that gave me a lot of faith in that. Just like in the universe, I think. I was kind of like, okay, all right. I like to believe there's something. I don't know if it's, you know, we're getting spiritual on this podcast. But I'm like, I don't know if it's God. I don't think that's for me to decide. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I recognize my place in the universe, and that is not to try to understand what the furnace of creation. Mm-hmm. If it is God, if it is the universe, it's nice to believe that there's something with its foot on the gas, whatever it may be. And my kind of journey into acting has kind of solidified my belief that, like, okay, yes, things do happen for a reason. Mm-hmm.
How did Supergirl happen? Was it just random audition?
Yeah. It was just another audition my agents sent me. They said, this is a big one. So, cause usually I just filmed them on like photo booth on my laptop because I was a poor college kid and that's what I had. I didn't have like a fancy camera or anything to record things on. So I paid a kid like $70 to film and edit it. And I read it with my friend and we sent it off. And then when I was in Los Angeles, they had asked, oh, can she send in another self-tape? My agent said, no need. She's actually filming in Los Angeles right now. So I had one day off from filming. And so I went to the Warner Brothers lot, auditioned for our showrunners and the executive producer. And the next day, I was a superhero.
Wow.
Yeah. It was bizarre. It was a bizarre kind of like just...
Yeah.
It just happened. I was like, oh, wow. My life just dramatically changed forever in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. What? So did it feel different working on that kind of set? I mean, you used to do like the transition to just like a regular set was already like, well.
Yeah. I mean, all three of them are such different projects and they're so, and that's what I liked about them. It was kind of, and I got a feel for like different types of shows and what kind of stuff I like doing. I mean, Supergirl was so much fun because there was so much. I mean, we had the best crew, the best cast. We had so much fun. I mean, we got to be superheroes and not everyone can say that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and it's something that I'm endlessly proud of.
Yeah.
It is. And it's just, and it's cheesy and like feelings as it is, it feels like something that I was really meant to do, and creating this superhero and building her up from what she was originally intended to be, which was just, you know, an original character for the show, into what she is becoming now. I wrote her introduction into the DC comic universe this past June for the DC Pride issue. I'm writing a new graphic novel featuring the Amal now. Like, it feels like creating this superhero is something I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm doing it, and it feels really exciting.
Yeah. What is the future for the character? Like, do you plan to do more with it?
I have so many ideas.
Yeah.
I have, and that's the thing. Because I love to, like I said, I love to take walks and go on strolls. And that's all I think about. At any given moment, I'm thinking about Nia. I'm thinking about Dreamer. And I'm coming up with ideas. Like, you know, sometimes you run programs in the background on your computer. That's how my brain works.
Yeah.
There's just a constant Dreamer program running in the background, coming up with new ideas. Ooh, what if we do this? My problem, however, is that I'll come up with an idea, think it's fucking dope, and then realize realistically, you know, that's probably not an idea that I could utilize for the next 5-10 years down the road. And so I'm like, that'll be great when she's an established superhero. Mm. But, you know, just starting off right now, you know, so what I'm doing right now is the graphic novel is kind of like, there's not too much I can say, but it's like a kind of like it's her origin story. This is going to be like her comic book origin. I'm really excited for people to see it because I'm having so much fun with it. And it's nervous because I'm not like, I wasn't like a writer. I never was thinking that was something that I was ever going to do. So, I'm like, I hope it's any good. I don't know what people want in a comic book. And I'm just writing a comic that I would read, that I would think is cool. And I don't know if my taste is everybody else's taste, but it's got lots of puns, lots of Easter eggs, and lots of, you know, superhero comic book action.
Yeah. So, has this happened before where like there's an original character on screen that's essentially like, you are the character, like in a way that I feel like doesn't exist a lot. At least
it's a unique situation.
Yeah. Especially now that you're writing the character like that. Yeah. I feel like that's like that. So you're, really, you are this person.
Yeah. I mean, my relationship with this character might be borderline a little unhealthy, but, you know, this isn't about me or my psychoanalysis.
If you're not watching the video, that's literally who is Dreamer is behind her. And that's her. This is an actual old. Are you going to put on a costume and start like being a superhero in real life?
You know, I would, but I'm working on a new project right now, and they wanted me to do a learn how to do like a round off, and I'm like, okay, like I can hardly do a cartwheel.
A round off is that?
A round off is like a cartwheel, but then you turn around 180 degrees in the air and like land with both feet, and then it's supposed to like prep you to go into a back handspring.
Right. And you were like,
and I'm like. And I woke up this morning. I thought I was like, yeah, I'll get this. Like, I didn't do it great, but I was like, I made some good progress yesterday. I woke up this morning. I could feel everything in my legs, and that was the problem. Everything hurt. And so that kind of told me, I'm like, maybe a vigilante career is not in my future.
It's just growing pains. You'll get there.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm jump in front of a bad guy, and I'm like, my thighs. Oh, can we do this with as little running as possible?
Yeah. So
actually, you know what? Take her purse. You go. I can't do this today.
I haven't done a lot of this yet. I'm still sore.
Or on the other hand, I give full Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns, and I'm like, be gentle. It's my first time. Oh, love.
Yeah. So you're still also, you know, acting, looking like getting new roles, new exciting things. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Thank you very much.
Is that the plan? Like, is this you know, because I feel like sometimes when actors start to like direct or write something, like, oh, this is actually kind of fun. But you're like, you're full on acting is my thing.
I think it can be both. Kind of was always of the mindset that I was like, as far as we know, as far as, you know, scientific evidence supports, we have one life, YOLO.
Mm.
I'm like, I want to do it all.
Yeah.
I am down to have to put my hands in as many cookie jars as possible, keep my arms in as many doors as possible, and just try different things. And cause why not?
Yeah.
If you have an opportunity to do something, try it. And so I absolutely am going to continue acting, but I'm also going to continue writing because it's something I discovered I really, really like to do. And I think I'm good at it. I'm having a marvelous time. And as long as they're going to say yes to me, and because that's the thing also. And even when I get concerned, I'm like, oh God, can I do good in this scene? Oh, gee, that's not I'm not the person who has to worry about that. That's the casting. That's on casting. That's on directing. That's on the viewer. You know, if the viewer had a good time, great. That's all that matters to me. I'm going in. I'm having a great time. I'm having a blast. I'm doing what I love to do. I'm getting paid to do it.
Yeah.
So it could be worse.
Do you feel like this is sort of like the start of a new like era in your life? And now you're in LA.
Yeah, I think it feels like a checkpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got some really good advice. I was talking to my boyfriend about this last night because when I heard it, it was like just one of those pieces of advice that sticks with you. Mm-hmm. And when I heard it, I was like, oh, checkpoint. I was talking to Eric Wallace, who's the showrunner of The Flash. And I was just talking about, you know, my writing and what I'm doing with this character. And, you know, just, you know, as a black writer, he totally gets it. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he said, Nicole, break the fucking door down. And when I heard that, I was like, so that's something I'm really carrying with me. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm really passionate about Dreamer. I'm really passionate about this superhero. And I'm really excited. And I think it has legs. I mean, and to go back to your point, you know, has a superhero ever started on screen, moved into the comics? Not a lot, but Harley Quinn originated on the Batman animated series.
Oh.
She was supposed to be like a background character for one episode, and then fans loved her so much they brought her back, expanded upon her story in the episode Mad Love, then more in the comic by the same name, and then, you know, now she's arguably one of their biggest properties.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, there's no reason Dreamer couldn't do that too.
Yeah.
Why not? She's great, and again, arguably the most powerful character in the Arrowverse.
All right. Is that gonna spark controversy? Are people gonna start arguing?
I'm right, so it shouldn't. It shouldn't be controversial because I'm correct.
Yeah.
But I mean, just you know, look at her skill set. She's seen the way I describe the way I've sort of made sense of. But yeah, no. I mean, if you look at her skill set, the way that I've kind of made sense of her to myself is, I'm like, it's like if Wanda Maximoff had a Green Lantern ring, could see the future, and could fight like Black Widow, all with the upbeat sensibility of Peter Parker.
Okay.
That's Dreamer. She's like four superheroes in one. She's awesome.
Yeah. Is that like, what would be your dream? Pardon the...
Dream, that's the other thing. Dreamer is all about puns.
Yeah. I would imagine it would be super cool in your eyes to be able to like do more with this character, have a movie or a show on the character. Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, what would be like your dream role for as an actor? Like, is there anything you're like really like, oh, I'd love to be able to do something like this?
Yeah. I mean, I really thought like, I was like, after superhero, what do you do after superhero?
Yeah.
I want to do Star Wars.
Yeah.
I want to do like Ayla Sakura or Asajj Ventress. Those are kind of my two that I'm like, I could nail both of those. And this is my pitch. I'm like, you know what they should do? They're doing like, you know, the Obi-Wan Kenobi story, the Ahsoka Tano story, yada, yada, yada. Why are they not doing a show about Quinlan Vos? Notorious Jedi rogue. Jedi Master of Ayla Sakura, everyone's favorite hot Twi'lek. Like, that's a show.
You know, they're churning these shows out.
They are pumping them out, man. They are pumping them out. But I'm like, yes, but also we don't have to keep going over the same six characters. There are others that we can address.
And I think the cool thing about that is when you go to, you know, other characters and like other situations, it really helps like build the universe out, right? Like it makes it feel more lived in and like
totally. Yeah. Well, I'm like, there's just so much content in Legends that it's like you can keep making shows forever.
Yeah, people love
them. You should do it, please. We want to. We want to keep seeing them.
I
started watching Visions last night. Star Wars Visions.
I only watched three, I think.
Okay, yeah.
But the first one was my favorite.
Me too.
Yeah.
They really came out strong.
I was worried that would be the best one. And that I would, yeah.
I'm a little worried. I'm like, just so far, I'm like, I mean, you came out strong. her lightsaber was an umbrella.
It was really cool.
What? That's awesome. So cool.
Yeah, and I think the third one was like they were like a rock band or something.
That was the second one. The third one was the twins.
Right.
Which I liked it.
Yeah, there just weren't any umbrellas, lightsabers.
Also, I was like, when he like cut her in half, I was like, how did she not get cut in half?
Yeah.
Her suit did, but she didn't. But like the ship behind her did, which was just like a shot-for-shot remake of that hyperspace scene from Last Jedi. I was like, okay.
I have to ask, what are your Last Jedi thoughts? Are you a supporter or a detractor of Last Jedi?
There's pros and cons.
Okay.
As there are to all of them in the sequels.
Yeah.
As, you know, across the board, the sequels aren't my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my biggest problem with it is I was just like, I want to tell a Star Wars story without a Death Star. Like, why is the biggest, like we're in a galaxy far, far away. And the biggest threat we can come up with is another laser.
Well, wasn't that Force Awakens more?
Yes, but then, you know, it's kind of...
They're kind of like stuck with it, yeah.
Same thing. You know, I don't know why they had to stop to, you know, free the kids. I felt like they were... or their mission was a little more urgent than that.
Yeah.
I liked the Princess Leia spacewalk. I thought it was due that she got her kind of like, you know, she Leia's force sensitive too. So mm-hmm. I was like, yes, thank you. She's a Skywalker too. Let's put some respect on her name. I don't know if surviving deep space was the way to do it.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
But also, and then just in Rise of Skywalker, I was like, so you telling me you just had a fleet of Death Star Star Destroyers this whole time?
We don't even need to. Rise of Skywalker, you know.
My favorite thing, though, is watching those reactions to people in the audience when they're like, who are you? And it's the long beat with the Skywalker score. And then just the audience going, don't say it! Rey Skywalker. Ah! That's hilarious, but they were entertaining.
Yeah I like Rogue One.
The peak I was literally just about to say,
yeah.
Rogue One was, that's what I want. I was like, you guys had a dope ass trilogy, and I'm a huge fan of the prequels.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just nostalgia for me, but I loved them. I kind of liked seeing, because with the prequels then you get more into the socioeconomic, yeah, political scope of what a galaxy
say,
far,
say
far
what
away
you will
looks
about
like.
George Lucas, he knew how to build
a
world
universe.
Yeah,
totally. And it was that's what I really like to see. And I think with my big problem with the sequels is it felt like just a lot of like rinse and repeat. It was kind of like we knew this worked before,
yeah,
so let's repurpose it for this.
The universe felt smaller in the sequels.
It did, kind of, yeah. Yeah, that's the way to describe it. And then also I was like, I don't know if what's wrong with straight people, but I'm like, why are y'all kissing each other after you tried to kill each other? Why is this such a trope?
Yeah.
I was like, she just tried to kill him. Now they're kissing. Are you guys okay? You think this is normal? Stop trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm just saying, if you're making out, you don't hate each other that much.
Yeah.
You don't want to kill him that bad.
Well, this was a lot of fun.
This was a lot of fun. I love any opportunity I get to geek out about Star Wars.
Yeah. It's look, anytime.
Oh yeah.
We're not that far away now. If I'm up in LA, I'll let you know. Yes. If you ever come down to San Diego, please let me know.
Oh yeah. Have you ever speaking of things in California that are Star Wars, have you been on Rise of the Resistance yet?
I haven't.
It's bonkers.
Yeah.
It's like a full, the queue is really awesome. But like you're in a Star Destroyer and there's like life-size AT-ATs and like it, just the scope of it was bizarre.
Yeah.
And so crazy. But it's like you stepped onto a Star Destroyer and there's like a legion of like stormtroopers in front of you.
Oh man.
It was the coolest thing.
Wait, so where is this?
This was at Disneyland.
Okay. I went to Universal for Halloween, which was fun.
Yeah, I do love you.
But I've not been to Disneyland. All right.
Star Wars. I mean, the Star Wars land at Disney is nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, you can take a picture with the Millennium Falcon. Come on. Awesome. And you get to build your own lightsaber.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
I'm
highly recommend.
I'm more of an Ebon Hawk. I don't know that from the Old Republic. Did you ever play the Knights of the Old Republic games?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man.
I know. Sacrilege.
I really hope they do something with that. I really want.
I mean, I've only ever heard amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I only ever hear it brought up when people are like, this is the greatest thing of all time.
I loved it as a kid. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I learned what the word obsessed meant because somebody said, you're obsessed with Star Wars. And I was like, what? What does that mean?
And then they tell you and you're like, correct.
And I was like, oh, is that bad? I'm sorry.
Yeah, seriously. My same thought. I'm like, yes, I am obsessed with Star Wars. Thank you.
Yeah.
My life size baby Yoda right there. I like to put him on the ground and move him around. So then wherever I am in my apartment, he just looks like he's staring at me like expecting something. I did not watch Big Brother this season.
Yeah. It was actually pretty good.
I know, that's all I heard. And like after last season, I was like, I don't think I can do it again. I don't think I can put myself through that. Mm-hmm. And then like all I heard was like, this is the best season. Oh my God, love it. Woo, the cookout's amazing. Best alliance ever. And I'm like, fuck, this was the one to watch.
We'll see how 23 goes.
Yeah.
I'll let you know.
Thanks. I'm still waiting for the Celebrity Big Brother call. I'm like, please, I want to do it. Although frankly, and this is my idea, I think they should remember, what was it? It was BB 18 when they had like Davon and Nicole and Paul and Paul come back and they were like the team captains. That's what they should do. But with celebrities
to have
like, four celebrities like coming back as like the team captains. And then you're
from previous celebrity seasons, you're saying? Or are you saying come in?
Because I was like, I feel like Celebrity Big Brother doesn't get as large a viewership as regular Big Brother does. So I'm like, you should just combine the two.
Oh, okay.
You just have like a celebrity season of regular Big Brother and have like, you know, four celebrities, you know, just stay there for an actual season.
I think they'd probably have trouble getting people to stay for that long, right?
I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Do they know that you would do it? Because I feel like you'd be great. They do?
I was at a general meeting at CBS years ago when I first started coming out here. And I was like, listen, if you ever need anybody, you call me and I will be there.
I mean, we need to make this happen. It's ridiculous. Now I'm really going to be looking at the cast for this season. And being like,
is this my subtle announcement?
What I'm saying is that like, if any single person on that cast is like not the most amazing person I've ever seen, I'm gonna be like, why wasn't Nicole there?
Aww.
Why wasn't Nicole in that spot?
When I was a kid, I was talking to one of my friend's mothers was like a super fan, and I had told her I was like, yeah, I'd love to go on that show one day. And she grabs my arm and looks like what I can only describe as like a look of shocked realization on our person. She goes, you're good. Said, yeah, I know. Why do you think I'm going to lose?
Yeah.
You know, unless it's like sequester and I'm in a room with two people and
eliminated third. When you actually got to play, it was like on a cast that was like they had all played before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's especially with sequester, like it got very like insular and like there were already alliances everywhere.
I got in and everybody had already been pre-gaming.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought like we weren't pre-gaming. And so I came in and I was like, hey everyone, how's it going? And everyone was like already grouped up. And I was like, aw, it's just like my first middle school dance.
Oh man, I was so disappointed even though I hadn't really pre-gamed with you. So you were kind of a wild card for me, but I thought that your connection to Brendan at like you being actors would help.
I was ready to sweep. I was ready. I was like, yes, this is going to be amazing. No.
Yeah.
No. Fall flat.
Oh man. This was really fun though. I'm glad we got to talk.
Me too. Thank you very much for having me on.
And that was Nicole. Thank you so much for listening. Like I said, great conversation. She's very funny, very fun to talk to. So I hope all of you enjoyed it. You can, of course, find me over on Twitter @ArmstrongTaren. or on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. I'm also making some YouTube videos over at Taryn's Quest on YouTube. So check all of that out. Next week, we will have another great guest for you, so be prepared for that. And that's what I've got. So thank you again for listening. I really appreciated all of the kind words being sent my way from all of you listeners. So thank you so much, and I will see you next time.
It's the Taryn Show.